you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome to How to Survive with Danielle and Christine, the show that teaches you how to survive the things that can kill you.
Like El Nino. Or far-right fascists.
Yuck.
How about drowning?
Yuck. Ooh. And the things that just make you wish you were dead.
Like nuts in your face.
Mm-hmm.
Jerky boyfriends.
Mm-hmm.
Or manual labor.
Yuck.
You know what? Let's play the theme
song. Theme song, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Shaking under our feet, mountains on fire, flooding in the street. Can't breathe the air, can't fight the feeling. Gobbling down Xanax ain't the way to be dealing. Gotta do better than just getting high. We gotta stick together if we're gonna survive. Ooh, how to survive.
Ooh, how to survive. Welcome to How to Survive. I'm Danielle.
Hey, Danielle.
Hey, Christine.
We just introduced ourselves.
I know.
So we know who we are.
But I'm trying to make sure everyone knows which voice belongs to whom.
Do you think there are people besides your dad that don't, that have a hard time telling our voices apart?
I have no idea. It's possible. Well, a little neighborhood news. The Girl Scouts.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
That's the sound.
That's the neighborhood news sound. That's the sound of the 7-Eleven door opening.
Or it's like the trolley from, you know, Mr. Rogers' neighborhood.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. So the Girl Scouts in our neighborhood got together and got some cages.
I was not expecting the word cages to come out.
I know. It's a new thing where they're putting each other in cages and seeing if they really are prepared.
Okay.
And all they get to eat are the worst kind, whatever you think the worst kind of Girl Scout cookie is.
I think it's that just plain one. I can't think of the name
of it. Do-si-do or something? No, it's just like a... What are those?
Trefoil.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Not even the name.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Trefoil.
I don't like, what are those cookies called? The shortbread. I don't like shortbread. Anyway, who cares? They got together to do the catch, neuter, and release of the cats.
Oh.
So they borrowed, I think, 8 cages from this place. They captured 5 last night.
Oh, my God. Were any 5 of them Benjamin?
Yeah. No. Well, I didn't want them to catch Benjamin because I'm assuming Benjamin still has babies to feed. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to risk those babies dying.
I was hoping you were going to say, I didn't want them to catch Benjamin because he's my cat. That's all. Like, all I want in my heart of hearts.
Yes.
Is for you
to admit that
to become a cat person.
Yeah, I know.
And I want pictures of you on Instagram with the cat, like just
on, my shoulder,
on your lap, just being,
driving with
yeah,
me.
Yeah, just you, like you watching Succession with your cat, like I do, where my cat is like laying on me and we're watching it together. Like, that's all I want for you, Danielle.
Well, they caught Alex.
Okay.
AKA Big Daddy.
Yes.
Because the other neighbors named him Big Daddy.
The Sperminator.
Yes, who is constantly in fights, and his face is always torn up. And thinking is that once you get neutered, the aggression might go down. So they caught him.
Good.
And they caught who we call Grey Goose, who is our sweetie patiti pie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if Grey Goose is a boy or girl, but they caught her. They caught her. Not in our yard. No one was caught in our yard. But they tried, but no one... They had already gotten. So they got 5 cats. So they're all going to be fixed and released.
Oh, so they're since they're feral, they won't be put up for adoption.
Oh, no, no, no. This is the catch and release program.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, because they're taken care of by us, so by the neighbors.
I didn't know the Girl Scouts did this, and you know what?
Well, I think
I love that.
I think they chose it as their whatever service thing.
Girls are cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. So thank God, because I wouldn't have known what to do, you know. So and they. You know, they called a place that we called Kitty Bungalow that, mm-hmm. you know, either never got back to us or they didn't have. So they arranged it and got all the cages. And so they should be back tonight.
Thank you, Kitty Bungalow and
yes,
Girl Scouts.
I know.
Shout out. And if you guys want to send us Girl Scout cookies, don't stop yourself.
Yeah.
I thought maybe that would work.
Seems... I think the season might be over.
Yeah, I think it is.
Can you get them all year round online now? I wonder.
I kind of hope not.
I don't think you can.
I don't want to know.
No, because it takes away the specialness.
Plus, yeah. I'd maybe be wanting to order them, and I don't
That's
need
why
to.
I don't want
to yeah,
know.
I don't need to do that to myself.
Yeah,
to my pant size.
Your pants have suffered enough. Let's face it.
Oh, I've been torturing them, just shoving myself into them.
Yeah.
squeeze, button. The other day, I was putting on a pair of pants that I got, you know, through this monthly. Program that
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
trying
yeah.
to get to sponsor
she's
us.
She's in a program where she's, yeah.
where I get clothes and then I send them back and then they send me other clothes.
Have you kept anything yet?
I haven't.
Oh, okay.
I haven't. So it's a kind of, it's kind of working out.
Okay.
But I'd gotten a pair. They were too tight, but I really liked them. So uh-huh. I was like, well, next time I'm just going to order the size up. And they're still tight. Like,
oh.
I think they just, they run really small.
Of this brand,
of this
mean?
Brand. You know okay. how pants are where it's like, you don't
yes.
know what size you ever are if you're a woman, because in one size you're this size and another size.
Yes.
You're like, oh, how am I a 2 in this size and I'm a 12 in
right.
this? It can like drastically shift.
Right. Banana Republic, I'm a whole size down because their pants are, they're what I call vanity sizing.
Yeah, like, I'll shift multiple sizes.
Okay.
So, Alex came in the room. She goes, Mom, don't you think those pants are a little too tight? And I go, I think they're fine.
Pop, pop, button, button.
And she's
flies,
like, well, it just looks like you're really struggling to
oh,
get
no.
that top button buttoned.
In what world do you think those pants fit?
Yeah. These are my kids.
Oh, I finally watched Rebecca last night.
The original.
Yes. Finally.
What'd
sorry.
You think?
Yeah, it's great. I think I got to go back to the book because there's certain things that are different.
It is different.
But a lot of it was so similar that I was like, why are people saying it's so different? But I think it's the main thing that's a little different.
The ending is different.
The ending's different.
There's
yeah.
some lines in the movie that are ridiculous where he's like, never, ever be, please never
oh,
be 33 or something like
she
that.
She says, I want to be 36. Don't ever be 36.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like stay young and dumb
yes,
lines,
yes.
which you kind of understand as the movie unfolds, but it's very creepy.
Yeah.
And also it's so melodramatic. Like
yeah.
Joan Fontaine, her acting is so over the top. I mean, I know she was probably directed that way.
Yeah.
But it's just like every moment she's like terrified and scared and
yeah.
like I understand why, but it's just
yeah.
Yeah. It's not the most subtle of performances.
It's a fun movie though.
Yeah.
But
it is.
I don't think it can compare to the book, which is I think
yeah. That's true.
I think the book is really underrated as a literary
Such
classic.
A, yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's so good.
Agreed.
Everyone please read Rebecca. It's and I have I got I know we're gonna start. I think I already recommended this, and I'm gonna recommend it to both of you. I have some questions for you. Is
That's a book?
It's a book.
Oh, I already wrote it down.
You gotta read it. It's such a page turner, and it's
okay.
You're gonna love it.
All right.
It's gonna be one of your favorite books.
I have some questions for you.
Guys, okay.
Yes.
You're going to have some questions for me.
Yes.
Because we are going to start the show.
Let's do it.
And it's a fun one.
Good.
We haven't done it. I can't believe we haven't done it since we've been podcasting for so long now.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about how to survive drowning.
Ooh.
We don't want to drown.
No.
Mm-mm.
I mean, it's one of the ones that I worry about. I have a fear.
Yeah.
I'm kind of afraid of the ocean.
Yeah. It's,
and
it's scary.
When my kids, when we go to the beach... I'm not a big go in the ocean person.
Yeah.
I'm a more of a waiter, you know?
I'm more of a lay down and read my book
okay.
in the sun person.
You know, when you have little ones, you kind of have to
I
go.
Know.
You can't
I know.
Not.
Yeah.
And now that they're older, and I find the Pacific to be so cold that I don't even like to stick my feet in. But
it's
my kids,
awful.
Especially Benjamin, they like to go out in it.
Yeah.
And I am a nervous wreck.
I'm sure this is not going to surprise you, but my son... Not a fan of the beach.
Well, I like that about him.
Really?
Well, because it's...
It's a bummer.
I guess it's a bummer, but it's also terrifying when they love it.
Keeps them safe, yeah.
Because it's, I find the ocean to be unpredictable. I don't find it. It's a fact.
Yeah.
It's dangerous, unpredictable. Yeah. And it can pull you out at any moment.
Taciturn? Is that the right word?
I love that word.
Is taciturn the right word? Just look up taciturn and we'll do it in What Did We Learn?
Yeah, I like it. Well, please. I've got some information from a couple of experts, Lisa Sisley and Rita Krenz.
What couple of names?
I know, right? I love it. It's two women. They've seen it all. I'm going to tell you about who they are. Sisley is a firefighter paramedic with the Wintergreen Fire Department. These are two women from Virginia.
Okay.
Because I got this really fun list of information from, I think it's like the University of Virginia's website.
Okay.
And she's also a lifelong member of the Lake Monticello Fire and Water Rescue Squad. Krenz serves the UVA emergency room as a paramedic. She also served 25 years on the Scottsville Volunteer Rescue Squad, which included water rescue. They've seen whitewater rescues, pool drownings, boaters lost on rivers,
whoa,
friends jumping off dams, and kids getting caught in hydraulics.
Oh, what?
Oh my God.
I know, very specific. So they're gonna go through the top 10 mistakes people make.
Okay.
And in all these mistakes, we're going to get some fun stories and some good information. Mistake okay. number one that people make when it comes to water safety. Do you guys want to try to take a guess what that would be, or do you want me to just tell you?
Just tell us.
Enter the water.
Yeah. I mean, well, this is when I say it, you're going to
close up your nose, ears, and mouth. Put masking tape over your mouth.
Those are good ones. Those are yeah. good. Those are really fun guesses.
Put rocks in your pockets.
Oh, what about a bat? Virginia Woolf.
Virginia Woolf.
Made
it.
The biggest water mistake you could make.
Do not swim with your bag full of rocks.
Yeah, in this case, this is one time you don't need it.
This is the one time, yeah, you don't want that backpack full of rocks. This is not going to surprise you guys when I say it. Drinking alcohol.
Oh, of course.
This is the number one cause of most rescue scenarios.
Wow. Okay.
So Sisley says, God, I'm really going to resist doing a Virginia accent. I'm just going
to. You don't have to if you want to.
Don't resist.
You're 10 feet tall and bulletproof when you're drunk. You jump off things you normally wouldn't jump off of. You dive into things you normally wouldn't dive into. I'm not going to do it the whole time. I just wanted to do it that one time.
It worked with that sentense.
Right?
10 feet tall and bulletproof.
That's got to be a country song, right?
Oh, it has to be.
Right?
Yes.
10
yes.
feet tall and bulletproof.
That's how they describe their hats.
Yeah.
It's like Alan Jackson or that Toby Keith, you know, those guys that are now like at some school board meeting trying to get them not to say, you know, gay anymore. Okay, drinking alcohol, which I'm going to do tonight and every night for the rest of my life. Okay, so obviously, this is what happens, right? Your risk of drowning intensifies because your reaction time slows. And if you're drunk and your friends are also drunk, it might take them a while to notice if you haven't come up for air. You know, they're all just doing shots on the boat and they don't notice that you fell in. It's easier to get lost. Okay. They've found people miles upstream, completely delirious under the influence of alcohol with no diarrhea, with no idea where they are.
Plus.
Yeah, they're dehydrated. Dehydration happens, right? Uh-huh. You combine this heat of the summer and then you're drinking alcohol. And, you know, that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, you always see these videos of like people on the lake in boats and
yeah.
a lake house. Remember there was something last year where, not a lake house, like a boat, you know, like a,
mm-hmm.
you know what
like
I'm talking
houseboat.
About? Like a houseboat.
Yes.
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 A white person on a boat.
Yeah. And then they're all screaming at each other and it got into like a physical fight.
Yes.
Yeah.
This sounds really
with
fun.
Like a lot of beer koozies.
Oh,
whatever
yeah. This is going to happen this summer to so many people. People misjudge the heat.
Mm.
You're upping your risk for hypothermia and sun poisoning.
Okay. Hypothermia because you sweat or something?
So you underestimate the heat when you feel cool due to the water and you're drinking cold beer or Gatorade, Sisley says. But you don't realize you're in the sun on reflecting water in a tube for 6 hours. So she's talking about somebody tubing like down a river.
Uh-huh.
You're sweating more than you're taking in and your body's not able to get rid of the heat as fast as you're accumulating it. So I think maybe that when, I'm not sure about the hypothermia, maybe because you sweat so much.
That's what I was
and
thinking.
Then when it cools down.
You know how you always feel clammy when your sweat is cooled and dried? Maybe it's something about that.
It might be something like that. I don't have the capability of explaining it.
As long as you're not drinking Bud Light.
I think I'd rather drink my own urine. Mistake number two, forgetting water facts during a flood. Okay. Cicely recalls seeing news coverage of a flood in Oklahoma on TV. She watched in horror as two firefighters in swift-moving floodwater tried to rescue a guy clinging to a tree. Neither had any protective clothing on. Neither one of them had a flotation device. They're in a good foot of floodwater. You can't see through it. It's brown. Their engine is in the water. And it's a disaster waiting to happen. She notes that it only takes six inches of water to float a car. Remember we talked about that?
Yes.
It feels like years ago now, but when we did an episode on flooding. People also forget about bacteria in floodwaters. It's easy for people to let their kids wade up to their knees, but you don't know what's in it as far as bacteria, whether the sewer systems have overflowed or not, or what's happening underneath. Oof. She recalls that after a hurricane in South Carolina, rescuers found an 8-year-old child in a culvert pipe. It looks like the water is smooth on the surface, but if you stand in front of that culvert and all that water shooting into that pipe, it's enough to pull you off your feet, and then you get stuck, and there's no way you can get out. She shakes her head. I don't think people think about it. Looks calm on the top, so you assume that it's safe.
Yeah.
I did it again. I'm sorry.
Oh, you don't have to apologize.
Okay.
What I don't understand is Virginia is right next to Washington, D.C., right?
Yeah, it's probably not, like, West Virginia.
But I always think of it as super southern, but it's not super southern.
It's not really.
But the accent? Is
I think it depends on, it probably depends on what part of Virginia you're in. West Virginia is, whew.
That's thick.
It's thick. Yeah, I've been through there. That's another world. Mistake number three. I like it, though. It's beautiful.
I bet.
Mistake number three. A slight slip in supervision. This is all the stuff that scares me. Krenz informs me that her rescue crew responds to at least one drowning or near drowning a season. The reason these drownings happen? I think the vast majority of children in this country are well supervised. It just happens really fast.
Yeah.
The children we see were in supervised situations, and there's been a momentary lapse. The typical situation she comes across is that mom and dad are inside and they're milling around. They think everybody else is watching. A kid jumps in who can't swim. And in 2 to 3 minutes, he's unconscious under the water. It's barely enough time to get a burger off the grill. You know, I think those parents went inside to have sex.
You do?
Yeah, I think they were just like, let's go have a quickie.
Because
milling around?
Milling around means their genitals were milling around. They found each genitals. Other. They met up.
Hey, do you want to go mill our genitals around?
Yeah.
Ooh, that sounds so gross. Okay. That's what I'm going to say to Sven later.
Let our genitals mill
around?
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound so sexy? The same thing can happen at a public pool with a lifeguard. It only takes a couple of minutes. So if the lifeguard's down at one end dealing with something and it's a couple of minutes until he's back scanning again, or she, and a junior over here is struggling, there's not enough time to fish him out. Okay, drowning is easy to miss. Okay, the challenge is that parents or lifeguards in you've got parents and lifeguards in pools with lots of kids. We all think if someone's drowning, it's going to be a loud, dramatic event, but it's not. When a child starts to drown, they sink quietly.
Oh, that's disturbing.
Yeah. They can scan the surface crowded with lots of heads, and you may not see there's a body under the water at all. Mistake number four, false faith in floaties.
Oh.
Yeah. This is really important information for parents with little ones, guys. So not us anymore, but, you know, we got some kids. We got some ones with little ones out there. Krenz's biggest pet peeve is floaties, also known as water wings. They give parents and kids a false sense of security.
Huh.
Picture a 5-year-old child unconscious with floaties, she says, passionately. Their arms go up because of the floaties and are the most elevated part of the body, not the child's head.
You need to put a floaty on the head.
You got to put a floaty on the neck. Head. Yeah, neck floaties.
Neck floaty.
Yeah.
I might just do that to cover up what's going on my neck.
Oh my God, my neck lately?
Neck floaty.
I've seen a couple selfies of me, because I took them. And I was like, oh, what the fuck's going on with your neck?
I don't know. I told you I was watching Golden Girls, Rue McClanahan. You could skate off that thing. It's so smooth. I don't get it.
She probably always knew how to...
She probably knew how to hold her head. Yeah. Also, she was a little bit plump.
And you know what? I think cell phones are doing it to us.
Cell phones?
Too much of this bullshit.
Oh, making us wrinkled because our neck's down. Okay.
Yeah, we got to just stop doing that with our necks. Okay. And, you know, just I cannot put a turtleneck on it. So I'm not going to do that. So it's going to be scarves for me. Okay. Her advice to parents, if you're going to be near water in a situation where your kid can't swim, put them in a personal flotation device, PFD.
Oh, like where you sit in it.
Or, yeah, or it's built into their swimwear.
Oh.
Have a stubborn kid resisting the PFD. Parents can choose life jackets integrated into a child's swimsuit. I had those. Those are great.
But wouldn't the same problem be that their head can go down?
Well, I think it's more, it's their chest too.
Oh, I see. If it's just on your arms, your whole body can go down.
So it will hold them up and sort of flip them back like this.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, I've seen those things.
Have a stubborn kid. Oh, okay. I already said that. Your goal is to keep the head above water. Anything that does that is better than wings. Okay, mistake number 5, floating without flotation devices. Krenz and Sisley have several anecdotes of people who have taken small canoes or boats on little ponds like Sharando Lake or Mint Springs. Doesn't Virginia sound nice?
It sounds like a fantasy world. I love
magical.
It.
Magical. We should all go to
Virginia.
Sounds
like there's unicorns with floaty devices on their horns just riding up to the edge of the lake.
Wow, she really went there.
I really did. I don't know where that came from.
Well, we should all go. And I want to go tubing, and I want to go with these two women because they sound fun. They're going to keep us
safe.
They'll
be responsible. We can drink.
Oh, we just drink so much. Not Bud Light, but just, I want one of those, like, have you had those German beers that have the lemonade in them and they're flavored?
No.
I'm going to get you some. It's so good.
I'm not a huge beer drinker,
You'll like this beer. Okay. I'm going to get some. You know what? I should bring it for our night.
Yes, bring it.
So yummy. I'll stop at the German market. Okay. These seemingly calm waters hide dangerously murky depths. Ignorant boaters will tip over, sink, and drown. And Krenz explains that you can have the best lifeguards in the world, but once your head's underwater in that kind of water, no one can see you.
Oh, for God's sake.
Those incidents lead to recovery, not rescue operations, searches that take hours as divers blindly feel around at the bottom for the body. You know, I think those people are heroes.
It's like that story of that I watched the documentary of the guy who was just on trial with the kids.
Murdaugh. And they had to dig around.
Yeah.
I just think. Okay. That's true. I couldn't be one of those people.
Who goes and looks for the bodies?
Yeah.
No. You mean because you'd be scared to bump into a dead body or because...
Well, I don't...
You don't like getting your hair wet?
I don't like to be in cold water. I'm not allowed to scuba dive, but also even if I could do all of that, being in a dark lake under and then having to just bump around and think maybe I'm going to find the decaying corpse.
Ugh.
This is all a no for me.
How is your other career, though, going? Aren't you going to be like a geneticist? Geneticist, yeah.
It's a little stalled right now.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I had... side job for a while that I just finished. So
I just had a dream last night that I was going to UCLA law school. Just remember,
I'm not laughing because
it's ridiculous.
You're smart enough, and I could see you as a really good lawyer.
And I was like, even in the dream, I was like, I don't really want to be a lawyer. I was like, I remember I said to someone, I think I should be a journalist, but there's really no journalism anymore.
No, not really.
I never wanted to be a journalist. I don't know. No. These were the options left for my career in my dream.
All good. Mistake number 6. Flotation vests that don't fit. Dummies. Make it
like
fit.
Like your jeans that you think you can get on.
Yeah.
You're not fooling anybody with that flotation device that doesn't fit.
Yeah, come on. You're not a size 4. When a life jacket is too loose, it doesn't work. Mm. You see a person submerged and the jacket comes up, Sisley explains.
Yes.
In those full body ones, people ride a jet ski in. If you pass out, you're face down. Sure, you'll float, but it's not going to hold your airway open for you. This is why child life jackets have straps that go between their legs. This mechanism holds the PFD down, and you want one that will actually flip them over. Some kayaking PFDs, for instance, have material that will turn you face up if you pass out.
How does it know?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Okay.
These may be more expensive models of flotation devices, Lisa and Reed acknowledge, but they're worth it, Sisley says. You get what you pay for with flotation devices, just like you do everything else. So I'm going to encourage everyone.
You don't want to use a plane wrap.
No, get the expensive one. If you're going on a whitewater rafting trip, if you're going kayaking, if you're going out in the water, even if you're like, I'm a good swimmer.
Yeah.
Up for the good one.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what could happen that can make you pass out. It could be sunstroke.
Right.
You could just have a boating accident.
Maybe you didn't eat breakfast that morning like a dum-dum.
Anything could happen that can make you lose consciousness. in the water that is of no fault of yours.
Okay.
Doesn't mean you're not an amazing swimmer. You could have been an Olympic swimmer. But if you get knocked out,
oof,
you want something that's going to flip you over and have your breathing right. tube up.
So they're saying the ones that go between the legs are good or aren't good? I got a little confused.
I'm confused, too, because it says this is why child life jackets have straps that go between their legs. This mechanism holds the PFD down.
Yeah, so it doesn't.
Oh, so it doesn't go.
Oh, so it doesn't fall off. Okay.
Thank you, Karen.
Okay. Got it. Thank you for interpreting.
Like a onesie flotation device.
Exactly. Mistake number 7. This is a pretty important one. Not knowing how to swim.
Oof.
Simplest and most straightforward safety measure to take. Teach your kids how to swim. You know, you can start when they're real little.
Yeah, I see those babies and I'm like, God damn it, I wish I had done that.
Yeah.
Like, what, start when they're itty bitty.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then you see these babies who love water and they know what they're doing. It's weird how, like, you'll see, like, an 8-month-old or something and they're like, know how to swim. It's so bizarre.
It's very cute.
It's cute, yeah.
I know. I should have just given birth in the water. Ugh. Just let them start then. But
that just seems like a recipe for drowning, too. I don't get that.
I think I would have drowned.
Yeah.
All right. Mistake number 8, jumping and diving.
Oh.
Got to be careful with this stuff. All right.
Yeah, that scares me when I see people jump from huge cliffs.
Oh, I mean, that's really, really dangerous. And too shallow water is also really dangerous. You can't tell how deep it is. And if you hit the ground or some other obstacle in the water, you can cause some very serious spinal injuries.
Yeah.
Hitting the water, if you misjudge your flip and land flat on your back or your belly from a height, that's a significant cervical or brain injury for sure.
Ugh.
At 50 feet, that's like landing on concrete.
Oh my God.
At 100 feet, it's a fatality every time.
Oh my God.
Don't do it. Just don't do it. It's not worth it. Even in the pool, if you, hold on, I lost my spot. Come on, dummy. Okay, I'm gonna start over. Even in a pool, hitting the water can have consequences. Landing flat on your back on the surface of the water can knock the wind out of you. Stunned and swallowing water, a child in this situation can end up unable to stop coughing, spiking a fever, and getting a wicked aspiration pneumonia from breathing in water.
Okay, now it sounds like they have left Virginia and have gone to Massachusetts.
They're in Boston now.
Yeah.
Hitting the side of the pool. Even in swimming pools, there's risks. People can injure their cervical spine quite badly when miscalculating a dive. Ugh, Benjamin did that in Hawaii.
What did he do?
He jumped off the side and tried to do a flip and hit the back of his head on the side of the, you know, the pool coming down.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, our trip's over. That's a concussion.
Did he have a concussion?
No, he was fine. But I was like, don't ever
that kid
do
should,
that again.
He should. Oh, my God.
I know. It makes me
crazy. He doesn't have a skateboard, does he?
Yes, they both do.
Oh, God. All right.
Mistake number 9, a lack of swift water savvy.
Oh.
Okay. We're going to talk about swift water.
Which I'm sure I lack swift water savvy, whatever it is.
There's only one Swiftie here, and it's Garen. Swift water.
A lot of controversy going on.
Is there?
With her boyfriend.
Ooh, what's
he's a piece of shit.
Is he?
Yeah.
She does not need another
he's
piece of
racist
shit.
He's a racist.
No, really?
Piece of shit, yeah.
It's Matty Healy from 1975.
I don't know him.
I didn't know him either until I read the article yesterday.
Well, I'm going to read
it. But she's known him for 10 years, so this should none of it should be a surprise. So now people are, there's a little backlash going on. Just thought I would let you know.
Okay, well, I'm going to read it. I'm going to not judge until I
also,
read it.
Also, when you see him, you're not going to immediately understand why this is the person she's...
Is he a scumbag? Does he look like a scumbag?
He doesn't look so handsome that you would give anything...
Okay.
Like, you know, that you'd let it pass.
She just got out of a 6-year relationship.
So
she
now
just
she's
jumped
with
right into
piece.
Some.
Yeah, this is a rebound.
Is this your defense?
No, I don't. I don't have a defense. I don't understand people's. It's weird that people are so. I get he's an asshole.
Well, because she's known him for 10 years.
Yeah,
that's
it's just,
why.
It's
so
just
it's not
the
like
fandom's reaction to this kind of stuff is. It's weird to me. Like there's a petition. Like, what do you
change?
Stop dating Matty Healy. I'm like. Great, I get it. The guy's a shithead. He's a piece of shit. He said stupid stuff. It's not your business, really.
Well, none of it's our business.
I want them to worry about the school board.
Yeah,
yeah,
no kidding.
Right?
Not Matt Healy. Okay.
Also, he is kind of hot, though.
All right. Well, you're going to have to bring up a picture, Garen.
I think I'm confusing him with Miley Cyrus's boyfriend, who I just found out yesterday she has a boyfriend, and he looks like a barrel of fucking laughs.
For real? Or
no, he looks like he's just...
He looks like a dirtbag? Have you guys
he doesn't look like a dirtbag. He just looks unfun.
Okay. What about Billie Eilish's boyfriend? Have you guys seen him? He looks like someone I mean,
is he way older than her?
For sure he is. He's like 33.
That's Matty Healy.
Oh, he looks cute to me.
Wait, let me see him again. Oh, yeah, he's not. I don't think he's cute. I think that's a good picture.
Okay. Well, that in that picture, I'm like, yeah, he looks like somebody who would be on, like, Gossip Girl. Okay. Swiftwater. Rocks on the river's edge bottom pose the biggest threat. If you try to stand, your feet can become wedged in them and your body flips forward. The scary thing is that this situation has happened to people with safety gear, experience, and with others watching.
You need like a one of those walkers underneath the water with tennis balls on.
I'm going to need one of those soon anyway. Cicely remembers one especially tragic example. Guys, get ready.
Okay.
There was a kid, very experienced, wearing all the safety gear he could in white water. He rolled over, came out of his kayak, put his feet down, and his foot got wedged between two rocks. He was trying to pull up to sit up to keep his head above water. Nobody knew what to do. After 2 minutes of doing a sit-up against 600 pounds of water, he couldn't do it anymore. He drowned in front of a restaurant full of people.
Oh, I wasn't expecting that.
Guys, sorry.
No.
Isn't that terrible?
That's terrible.
It's horrifying.
So wait, people saw him.
Yeah, but they couldn't go. It was like white water barreling.
Right.
Like, it's that thing where you're not supposed to, you can't
get into it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And they also might have been up on a cliff. Like, it's not that they maybe couldn't even get to him, potentially.
Right.
Cicely has a personal story, too. A friend of mine drowned 2 years ago, one of the best whitewater kayakers I've known. The force of the water, even if it doesn't look that strong against your body, you don't stand a chance. I think the lesson is maybe don't go whitewater kayaking.
And that's something I wanted to do. Not major.
You want to go kayaking, though, but in whitewaters?
I guess not. No.
Wait, you know what? Let's go to we'll do the LA River.
Can you really do the LA River?
Oh,
are
it's
you being funny?
No, it's amazing.
What?
It's so fun.
There's places in the LA River where there's water?
It's full of water.
Oh, okay, because it's not here.
Yeah, it's all wonderful.
Right.
It's wonderful.
All right.
It's really
fun.
Well,
you keep saying this. I'm waiting for an invitation, formal engraved invitation.
We have to book it.
Okay.
All right, let's look for some dates.
All right.
And I will show you the way. And I just don't want to ocean kayak because I get too scared in the deep
terrifying.
Ocean. But
yeah.
There's lots of other places we can kayak. Okay. So if trying to stand up in fast water could get you caught in rocks, what should one do to avoid getting swept away? Krenz and Sisley describe the proper way to self-rescue. This is really important, so let's listen.
Okay.
I know you guys haven't been listening, guys. Yeah. I know you're just cooking your dinner right now, guys.
Crushing your tomatoes.
You're doing your tomato against the grater, so take note. Aim your body toward the shore, feet first. Angle your body so the water will push you to one side or the other. Cross your feet.
Okay.
Put your arms on your chest. So you're like a vampire, uh-huh. right? In your coffin.
Yeah.
I'm going to call it vampire. Go into vampire pose.
Great.
But your feet are crossed.
So yeah.
You're crossing your feet. Cross your arms. Vampire pose. This isn't intuitive, Krenz recognizes. It's hard to do in a panic-ridden situation. You don't practice this as a normal human being. People are going to try to swim or try to stand up.
Oh,
right? Like, that's what
okay.
you would do.
Yeah.
So remember vampire pose.
Okay.
Mistake number 10, not knowing how to rescue others. Mm. Often people try to rescue drowning people or pets and get themselves into trouble. The problem, in the water, a panicking adult will try to stand on your head.
Oh.
Right? Like, they're going to try to climb on you.
Wait, what?
I think, you know, like, if you're trying to save someone else who's drowning, they're going to be kind of climbing on top of you, which is going to...
Oh, bring you down.
It's the brain's reflex to get to the surface, she
okay.
explains. They will try to climb up you to get high or get on your kayak and tip you over. The right thing to do, reach or throw, don't go.
Oh, I like that.
I love a little rhyme.
So you need to throw like a rope or whatever you have, a paddle, hold on to an end of a paddle.
Throw a buoy or skimmer to pull someone in. Throw a rope or bag. The last thing you want to do as a rescuer is get in the water.
Wow. Okay, you're right. I would not have known that. Glad I listened.
Which is exactly how I felt after this conversation. Like, the last thing I wanted to do was get in the water ever.
Yeah.
That's what this writer said.
But, uh-huh.
And me too. This writer says, but a few days later, who I'll credit in the newsletter, obviously, because I don't have their name right off of my tip of my tongue, describing some of the things I'd learned about surviving swift water and floods to friends, I have to admit, I felt not fear, but a sense of confidence. So that's some information
wow.
on how we're going to stay safe.
Good.
Okay.
Love it.
Would you guys like to hear a story?
Yes.
Okay. This is from a man named Jim Weilman.
Okay.
The name of the story. I nearly drowned.
Mm. I think I see where this is going.
I might have given it away.
You tipped it.
I would happily never have set foot in the Atlantic that weekend. This is in first person. I'd heard about the riptides just off the North Cornwall coast and was used to swimming in the calmer waters near my home in East Sussex. And I'm sorry I'm not doing this in a British accent, guys, but I didn't have time to practice last night because I was looking for an escaped cat. My brother-in-law was a keen surfer, though, and determined to convert me. The first morning of our visit, I was zipped into a wetsuit and marched to the water's edge. Like most first-time surfers, I quickly decided I was a natural, riding three large waves on my hands and knees. The current was far stronger than I was used to, and I had moments of sudden panic. Perhaps I should have taken them as a warning, but exhilaration won out, and when we visited a small cove farther up the coast the next day, I was keen to get back in the water. Those Brits love to say keen. I like that word. We should adopt it.
They like big eye paintings, too. And also, and also comfortable shoes.
Oh, my God. I love it. I like those things, too.
Yeah.
As the light began to fade, I felt compelled to have a last dip before we headed home. The waves had become choppier as afternoon eased into evening, but still appeared harmless enough from the shore. I plunged in and struck out, confident at first, realizing my mistake only when I was out of my depth. The surf dragged.
They're surfing at night?
You know, at dusk. You know, when the sharks are just just hungry and ready to chomp, chomp, chomp at you. The surf dragged at my legs, hauling me down, and rocks hidden below the surface grazed my knees and elbows as I tried to fight my way back to the beach. A great gray wave sucked me towards it and then broke across me like a sack of gravel, bouncing me along the seabed. Desperate for air, I was churned around until I no longer knew up from down. Then the current relaxed its grip and up I went, just in time for the next big wave to break over my head and push me back under. Each time I surfaced, the process repeated itself until I was battered and winded and still out of my depth. I swallowed water, tried not to breathe it in, waved frantically at the party on the beach. They were packing bags and chatting, paying me little attention. Once or twice, someone waved back.
This is
so my fear. From their perspective, it probably looked as if I was larking around, diving into the waves, waving but certainly not drowning. I'll never read that poem again, I thought.
Oh.
He really likes poems,
wow.
Guys.
Wow. He's keen on them.
Then it really struck me that I was actually about to drown and no one knew.
Oh.
I experienced an acute sense of loneliness and isolation as another wave thrust me down. I thought of all the stupid risks I'd taken without consequence, only to find myself overwhelmed in a moment of relaxation. In my work, I'd interviewed lots of people who had been in near-death situations. Some had mentioned fear and panic, others a sense of resignation. I just felt overwhelmed, helpless, and undignified, like a sock in a washing machine. Rather than fear, I experienced...
He's quite the poet himself.
Right? Listen to this. Rather than fear, I experienced sadness. It's all very well dying doing something you enjoy, but this had been the least enjoyable swim of my life.
Oh.
I feel like he's being so negative. As I struggled, an intense pain bloomed at the top of my chest, spreading downwards and inwards. That's my lungs giving out, I thought, or my heart. Back on the surface, I tried to wave again, but I couldn't lift my arm, and the pain became intolerable. I finally found myself able to breathe, but it only made the pain worse. The next wave offered some relief, though driving me towards the shore. My feet found a purchase at last, and I stumbled forward, my right arm dangling at my side. My brother-in-law, realizing something was wrong, ran into the shallows to guide me to the beach. "You've dislocated your shoulder," he said.
Oh.
Looking down, I could make out the strange peak at the top of my chest where my arm joint, torn clean out of its socket during the struggle, was protruding beneath the skin, Garen.
Wait, what? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm trying to picture this. Okay.
So his arm's just like...
Glonk.
I sat on the beach, wrapped in a towel, shivering. Someone brought me coffee, but I was suffering from shock more than cold. Breathing became increasingly difficult. I'd escaped the sea, but now felt as if I was drowning on dry land. I managed to gulp down the gas and air in the ambulance, nearly a whole canister on the hour-long journey to the hospital, where most of the pain eased.
Hour-long journey.
Yeah. You know, their hospitals are spread out.
Oh, I thought this was in California.
No, England, Cornwall.
Oh, I thought he was from England, but he was on a trip to, I thought, Okay. You said West Coast and I was picturing. Okay.
Most of the pain eased in an instant as my shoulder was popped back into place by a nervous-looking orthopedic doctor. Months of physiotherapy helped the damaged muscle, but nothing could rebuild my carefree attitude to water. The thrill of being at one with nature replaced in an instant by the sense of being at the mercy of an irresistible force. Even small waves filled me with apprehension now. There's a sea pool in Bude, a lido offering sanctuary from the tides. I swim only in there and stick to breaststroke.
Oof. That is scary as all get out. Well, all that talk of water has made me have to pee real, real bad. But that was a great lesson for us all.
Let's not drown out there this summer.
Let's not.
Let's not drown.
Top 10 goals. All right. We'll be right back with our guest. Right.
Yay. Welcome back to How to Survive with Danielle and Christine. Danielle.
Christine.
I don't even know what to ask you about your break.
Did you want to know if I did indeed pee the size of the Atlantic Ocean? Because that's what happened.
I figured when you have a water-themed episode and you have Danielle combined.
There's no getting out of that. You might as well have just like put my hand in warm water or cold water.
It's a tsunami.
It's a tsunami of urine.
Which is another, we've talked about tsunamis.
Yeah, that could be a subtitle for our show. The tsunami of urine. Just saying.
It's just a thought. I don't know. Is that a t-shirt?
I don't see why it isn't.
You think that's a big seller? Yeah. Do people want urine? The word urine?
Well, you don't have to know it's urine. It's just a yellow wave. You know, like the blue wave and the red wave.
Yeah.
This is the yellow wave. I don't know. Listen. I think we should welcome our guest in.
It seems like a good segue.
We are very excited to have a man who would have been on this show ages ago, except for I was under the false impression, for reasons I don't understand, that he lived in New York, so I never called him until I ran into him at the Writers Guild Award.
Maybe it's because he's so cool that you just think.
And we'll get into it in a second, but you know him as he's a writer, he is an actor, he is a stand-up, he will be appearing on the show Platonic on Apple TV.
Which sounds fun.
Yes, sounds really good.
I'm definitely going to watch it. I need a comedy.
Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne.
Love both of them.
Right? Yes, I love both of them too. And he was a producer and one of the stars of a little movie called Bros that you may have seen or not seen because you're homophobic as fuck.
Or you just don't leave your house.
No, I saw it. I loved it.
Oh, you can stream it.
You can stream it. Guy Branum. Hi, Guy.
Hello.
Welcome.
Good to be here.
Good to see you.
I am shocked and slightly offended that you thought, I mean, twice for jobs I've had to go to New York, but I identify as deeply Californian I have a birthright to there being grass and wasted water in my life.
Same here.
You know, salads.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in rural Northern California.
Nice.
Oh, where is that? What is it called?
It's called.
Does it have a name?
It's called Yuba City. It's like an hour north of Sacramento, our state's capital. So I'm not. It's weird having now been, you know, in Southern California for 20 years almost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I love LA and I'm proud of LA, but also still deeply identify as a Northern Californian.
Okay.
Oh, well, interesting. Do you go up there?
Sorry. Isn't Yuba City the name of some movie with numbers in it? Train to Yuba City 407.
No, Train to Yuma.
Yuma. Okay.
But there was a woman did write a Blacklist script called something Yuba County.
Oh,
really?
Like last year, and I got like upset that somebody else had written something about my shitty town, but it wasn't really about my shitty town.
Oh, okay.
Did you read it?
Oh, they made a movie out of it.
Oh.
A very bad movie that I've seen gay guys laughing at on planes. Alice and Janney gets to be kooky.
I think the reason why I thought you lived in New York was because of the Billy Eichner connection.
Oh, yeah.
And because I know it's a million years ago, but you did write for Billy on the Street, right?
Yes. There was a way that queer people and women in... Did you ever have to do Fashion Police?
Of course.
Yes. I mean, it was just like these non-union jobs that were jury duty for the people who, like, and there would truly be periods of time when I had friends who were boys who had a job, like a union job on some like E show or something like that. And I would be so pissed off that like he's mad to be writing these jokes and I love to write them and we have to go work this other stuff. But like Fashion Police was just a thing where if you were a lady or a gay, in the mail you got something, and then you had to go to Melissa's house in the Palisades and write for a while.
And serve your time, right. And then they called at midnight and told that you have to write 10 more jokes.
Yes, about yellow.
Right,
yeah.
That's it. That's exactly it.
It was truly, it was like writing boot camp of the highest order. Like, this is just shit talking, but like when the Jeselnik Offensive started a decade ago.
You write on that?
No, but I was like, do you have any female writers? And they were like, they couldn't find anybody. They tried real hard. And I was just like, there are, you know, 10 angry bitches sitting around Joan's table every week
who
have to write 10 mean jokes about yellow.
Yeah.
Right. And like, but you can't see that?
You can't find it. But you are here.
Yes.
Not only to praise Caesar, but to tell us your story.
Okay.
So where are we starting with this?
We are starting in the Central Valley of California in the late 1980s. And I was a seventh grader, and I was getting ready to be done with school, and my mom just sort of told me, like, well, this summer you're going to work with your dad. And then from then until my last year of college, every summer I had to go to some different point somewhere in the Central Valley, frequently 2 hours away from where we lived, and work construction. My dad was a construction worker, and I had to work construction every summer. And it was this weird kind of like masculinity crucible. I wouldn't say boot camp because I never learned anything and I never sort of picked it up. But just like every year I would be transported and placed among all of these, like, I, an extremely cerebral, gigantic gay child, amongst all of these like working class men, many of them with a strong relationship to crystal methamphetamine. More so, I mean, not like, but in like a functional way. These guys
really?
Were, these
they
guys
came to work.
They were nice functional alcoholics. They were nice functional, like, and the, like, crystal meth was more for like painters, like the other trades. So like we
each trade had their own drug of choice.
Absolutely.
How funny.
Absolutely. And you sort of like got this feeling for like, you know, the painters were potheads.
Okay,
and,
that checks.
Yes, and the carpenters thought they were better. The carpenters, the carpenters would show up in button up shirts.
Yeah,
and
really,
yeah, just sort of like a light blousy button up shirt. and my, sorry, my dad was a general contractor, but he was a cement mason by training.
Okay,
so most of what I ended up doing was like this very low level cement masony work.
Okay.
Like he would never really let me learn how to like properly finish concrete because it was like, I mean, to some extent it was like, these are adult men with families. They have a trade. Your job is to operate a shovel. And
I was like
a learning child. And if my dad had in any way been like, let me explain this to you, I would have maybe taken to it, but my dad didn't understand how to make anything pleasant.
So wait, can I back up for a second?
Yeah.
Was the purpose of this to un-gay and unintellectualize you in some regard?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So it was like he spends like my mom is a Jew, and even though she did not have like a fancy job or anything, she also was working class, but she still just sort of was like, you're allowed to read a book. You're allowed to have an opinion about the Coen brothers. Like,
you know. And the color yellow.
Yes. Like, no, I truly remember the woman watching Barton Fink and just being like, she didn't know where to put it, but she was trying, you know? And, you know, it was, and definitely an attempt to ungay me because at, you know, around 12, 13 is when it stops being kind of cute and weird.
Okay, yeah.
But he had also tried to ungay me very hard through Little League, which went very poorly.
I see.
He was my coach. He was my Little League coach.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Was it discussed that you were gay, or was it just kind of like, we know something is
like,
going on?
It was never discussed. Well, and it's also the really interesting thing of like, third graders are real good at the job.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They'll cut down to it.
They identified it very quickly, and my parents started achieving this panic. Mm. And they couldn't, you know, it was the 80s. They had a very hard, bad opinions about gay people. Mm-hmm. My mom worked at a flower shop for the faggots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we just knew that they were.
Oh, you mean she said that word?
Yes. I mean, it was just, it was the only thing we called them. We called them Bob and Don or the faggots.
Oh, wow. Okay. Got it.
And so, I didn't even understand. Like, this was around the point in time when I was starting to be attracted to men, mm-hmm. but I couldn't put it in my head that that might mean I was gay.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And so I would go to these weird spaces with these people that I had nothing in common with, and sort of not much would be done to bridge my relationship with them.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, my dad worked with my uncle, who was only 10 years older than me, and he was around, and he was a little bit cooler about it, mm-hmm. and, you know, would engage in, like, small talk while we were working.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it was just being shoved at some sort of horror.
Yeah.
First of all, it's the Central Valley. It's the summertime. I'm creepily enormous. And it's so hot. Like, it's just so hot every day.
You say Central Valley, I think blazing hot.
Yes. And you have to wake up in the morning, you know, usually at 4:30, so that you can drive
during the summer. God.
So you can drive an hour and a half. Like, there was this one summer when I was in college, because, like, in, like, seventh and eighth grade, it would be like sweep up this or that. But, like, by the time I was in college, I was expected to, like, do real work.
Yeah.
And we would wake up at 4:00. We would drive 2 hours down to Vallejo, to an Air Force base. You would work from 6:30 until 3:30, uh-huh. and then we would drive 2 hours home, and then I would eat food, I would shower, eat, and then watch 2 episodes of Welcome Back, Kotter on Nick at Night.
Perfect.
And then fall asleep.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was like, it was sort of like this shocking, part of what my parents were trying to do was give me a trade.
Yes.
Which was like, they didn't understand. They did not have, like, the capability to have confidence that me being good at school would result in, like, a profession.
A different pursuit.
Well, they were also working class, so that my family's working class, too, and that they didn't see education as a way to move forward.
Like, my mom hoped that that would be true, but there was also this sense of, like, fear and, like, how much will class hold us back or whatever. And so the idea that this was a thing I would always have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Like, during this period of time, for Christmas, every other year, I would get a pair of work boots.
So that
I had work boots.
But they were steel-toed, right?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Because it's like, you know, we're giving you the gift of not losing your toes.
Yeah, yeah. And was it also Merry partly Christmas? That both your parents worked and they needed somewhere for you to go?
I mean, my mom worked in cafeterias, so she was off during the summertime.
Oh, so you could
have just wanted alone time.
Yes.
Stayed home.
I mean, truly, yes. Well, I mean, the thing is before that, when I was little, what we had to do during the summertime was we were in an almond orchard, and we actually had to, like, get the almond, like, take almonds don't require that much care.
Yeah.
But the latter half of the summer, we would have to knock the almonds. And
reap.
That's how you say it?
I mean, it's like.
That's so interesting.
I don't
knock the almonds?
Like, they all were people from Arkansas and they all said almonds.
Yeah. For almonds. Okay.
And in that context, I never heard someone say knock the almonds.
Yes. Okay. It's knock the almonds.
But, like, you would, like, lay out a big tarp, and then all of the moms and the younger teenage boys had long sticks that they, like, pushed the branches around with, and the dads stood in the middle with mallets and hit it, and they just fell down on the children who were required to pick them up.
This sounds like a background for a good murder.
I mean,
It's okay.
The mic. It was truly ridiculous. And, like, finally there came a point where I would get a cool present every year at the beginning of almond season.
Was it made of almonds? almond butter?
No. It was like, all right. When I was, like, a small child, it was like, we're going to be doing this. Guy will be able to help some of the time. But, like, here is a Weeble Wobble mountain.
Oh, Weeble Wobble.
Yes. And, like, I would
wobble,
like,
but they don't fall
down. I loved those.
And so one year I got that, and my mom would put out a blanket and put my toy, and I would play with it, and then I would try to help with the almonds. But, you know, by the time I was 12, I had to be learning a trade.
Yeah, no more fun for you.
So, okay, so you're on the site.
Yes.
And did you balk against this? Did you ever tell them, like, I don't want to do this? Or was it, like, every day you were like, I don't want to do this? Or what was the attitude?
No, I mean, I just, like, would be annoyed getting out of bed and I would be whiny, but I understood that I had to do, like, this obligation. I was, you know, there was no use fighting against it. Like, when I was little and I would have to go to work with my dad on, like, a three-day weekend. Like, when I was, like, seven, Memorial Day, my mom would be like, oh, something exciting. You're going to go to work with your dad. And I was like, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Like, very similar to in the fall when I was little, there was one day, oh, something really exciting for your birthday. And I was like, what's this? And I was a child and I thought it would be good. And then it was like, I was going to get to go pheasant hunting with my dad.
Oh, and no. It was like, sounds like right up your alley. Well, you have the work boots. So
yes.
You can, yeah.
Well, and also all of these things involve waking up at 4:30 in the morning, which no one wants to do. So I wouldn't really rebel in that way. I would just be whiny and slow, which infuriated my father. And I never took the time to really appreciate that. And I don't know how, like, this isn't like a coalesced story. I'm not good at telling a story. I will tell you the two, like, horrible things that happened were there was, like, one-week period of time when there was this – do you guys know what rebar is?
Yeah. Yes.
There was a cube of rebar down in, like, under the ground in, like, a big hole. And I had to climb through the cube of rebar.
Okay, wait. How old are you at this point?
I am 17 or 18.
Okay.
And I'm having to tie wire on the rebar. But the thing is that what that means is that at all points in time, there are pokey pieces of wire within 4 inches of your eyes.
Oh, God.
And you're having to climb through it. And it is one of those things that just, like, it still makes me uncomfortable. Uh-huh. It still haunts me. And then the other one is I was, like, pushing a earth compactor that weighed about, 700 or 800 pounds.
Wait, so you're in a vehicle pushing this thing?
No,
or you're physically pushing?
I'm physically pushing.
Okay.
So it's basically like, it's like a push cart.
Okay.
That, like, makes the earth be more compact.
Okay.
And my dad had yelled at me about not trying to turn too fast or it would fall over.
Oh, no.
And it fell over onto my foot. And I didn't even sort of, like, acknowledge that my foot was in pain because I was just trying to physically push it up and right it because I knew that my dad would be mad.
Oh.
So, you know, it's like lots of that, but more just, like, sweaty, dusty, like, you know, misery of just, like, beyond anything else, nothing about this is charming or engaging. Nothing about this is, like, making your life a little bit better during the summertime. And
did they pay you?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, and the thing is construction workers are paid very well.
Like,
that job was for, it was at an Air Force base, and if you're working a government contract, they have to pay you union wage,
mm-hmm.
which meant
nice.
That I was making, like, one time I showed a resume of mine to a professor to, like, get a letter of recommendation. And it was like, I'm thrilled to know that journeyman laborers make more than I do.
I was going to say, you probably made more at that job than you did on Fashion Police.
Yes. No, truly.
Really?
I gave all of the money to my parents.
Oh, wow.
Because they were just like, I didn't realize, again, like, my father dying has changed so many things, but, like, my mom sort of admitted to me that they were doing poorly at that point in time, and that sort of, like, helped out, but it was just...
You didn't realize.
Yeah, I mean, they just... I loved them, and I appreciated them, and that was what my mom told me to do, and anything I could do to help, and it was only years later that I was like, Jesus Christ, if I had made, you know, 8-10 grand over the course of a summer, like... That could
have
really changed my life. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Or at least some of it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So when did you finally, because you said you were doing it in college. So when did you finally tell them I'm done with this?
I mean, I really didn't. I just got into law school.
Oh, like, that's right. I forgot. You used to be a lawyer.
Yes.
Oh, I completely forgot about that.
So, I mean, I never really said, I don't want to do this. I just sort of, I rejected it by, I'm somebody who loves learning about things. And I truly learned nothing about any of these things that my father could have taught
me
about.
They could have taught you a trade. I don't understand. Yeah. If they wanted you to learn a trade, why wasn't he really teaching it to you?
Because the thing is like he lacked the empathy to ever like understand how I learned and was trying to teach me the way that like he learned or the people around him learned, which was like through rote process. And I don't need that. I need book learning. You know?
Yeah.
And so there is something... I feel really bad about the fact that, like, I don't know these things and I was exposed to them so much and I truly wasted my time.
Right.
Like, if I had properly applied myself, I could have learned so much about construction and the Spanish language.
Yes. Right.
On those sites. And I just sort of absented myself and focused on, I mean, this is a podcast about surviving.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Here are the things I did to survive. First of all, and this is going to shock and offend you guys.
Oh, I can't wait.
The only entertainment that was allowed or accessible or permissible in these spaces was 3 hours of Rush Limbaugh between 9 a.m.
Oh my God.
And 12 p.m.
I was really hoping you were going to say Howard Stern.
I thought you were just going to say Tejano music or something. Not even music?
Not even music.
Why? Like, I always hear music on construction sites.
Periodically, there would, I mean, but the thing is my dad was in charge and he ran a tight ship.
He just was like, I decide and it's Rush Limbaugh.
So it was Rush Limbaugh loud enough that everyone could hear it?
Not all the time. Okay. The thing is like, these truly were scraps that were like glorious treasures of if you had to go in a truck to go get something. Or if there was one guy who had like a little transistor radio that was by him. And you would just sort of get that little bit of it, and they would just be, Rush is so funny.
Oh my God.
One time when I was 14, we were working on a strip mall in Sacramento, the Olive Tree Strip Mall, it is still there. And I looked across the street, and a muscly hot guy came out of an apartment and then walked to his car. And I spent the rest of the summer looking for him.
Oh.
I spent the rest of the summer, anytime there was a possibility to look in that direction, I looked in that direction. And I just got, the thing is like it elevated every moment on every construction site after them because it was like, I might see a hot person.
Oh, and did you?
No.
Just that, yes.
He was the only hot person there.
Actually, that's not true. Later that summer, there was another guy, one of the subcontractor's sons came to work and he had nice biceps. And I was just like, well, I get to enjoy that as well. Sometimes he will carry wood perpendicular to his upper arms and they'll
flexing
really pop.
Nice.
Lunch was very exciting. Like lunch was, so most of the time my mom sent our lunch with us and she would make very good, extremely sweet iced tea, which is very satisfying. But then also sometimes you would like go to a little place and the half hour that we had for lunch was also when divorce court played in Sacramento.
Nice.
And so frequently there would be a television and you would get like half of a divorce court.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So, still no conversation with any of these people.
No.
Not big talkers.
Not even your dad.
No, I'm certainly not my father. I mean, I would be wasting his time. And like the other people, there were like younger guys who were journeymen and like they would be telling stories about like the audio system on their car or, you know, like eating women out, like that kind of thing.
Oh, fun. Even if you weren't gay, kind of weird to be talking about in front of a teenager.
Yes. And so if these guys were just like in their 20s and also if they were smart or self-disciplined in any way, they would have a job that wasn't that terrible.
Right, yeah.
That's, I mean, it is a very lucrative job that helped so many people in my family and in that world.
But it's a lot of work. It's a lot. It's manual labor. It's hard.
It's manual labor. It's hard. And so I just like didn't have a lot in common with them. The things that interested me, you know, dragons. and it's like, it's honestly a little bit crazy to think about now because in our current media landscape, those guys would want to talk about superheroes or dragons or whatever. But like back then, it was just
been a nerd revolution.
Yeah,
for sure.
They would have been like Ford versus Chevy.
Right.
Let's talk.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, how awesome is Billy Idol was something that came up a lot. I was doing construction.
Yeah.
And then I was 3 years of law school. And only then after that was I able to sort of be like, this is not the thing that I will do.
Yeah.
And the thing is when I started stand up in San Francisco, I still thought I was going to have to be a lawyer forever.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. it didn't seem concrete to me that this could be a job. And there have definitely been times like after my messy leaving of Chelsea Lately, they were like, she was a little bit like, you know, don't work with this guy. Like, CAA, her agency as well, dropped me after that. And
wait, she was telling people don't work with you?
Yes.
Oh, that's rich. Okay.
Yes. And so there was a year.
Oh, that's scary.
There was a year when I really didn't work much. Like, I had one fucking month of colleges that I had booked beforehand that took care of me, and I had some savings from Chelsea Lately. The point is that this was the point in time when I was like, all right, do I have to re-up my bar membership now?
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Do I have to... Also, like, the way that you get jobs on a construction site is you go to the construction site. Like,
really? You just show up?
You show up and you say, I remember the one time a woman came to my dad and said that she was a mason and that she wanted to work. And my dad was very dignified and professional with her. And then the moment she was gone, he was just like, isn't that ridiculous?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I spent so much time being so mad at my parents for raising me to live a very different life from my own. But then, like, 10, 15 years into this business, I was like, oh my God, they taught me to work hard.
Right.
They taught me to work hard and to like, and also to be able to like love and enjoy the work that I have because it doesn't involve wires being very close to my eyes.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, there's no heavy lifting. I do not have to be hot all the time.
Right.
But still, and it's like, there are ways that it's bad to like always be working, but also it's been helpful.
Yeah.
It
does
put things in perspective.
Put a good work ethic into you.
Yeah.
I just have to say this because you mentioned Jennifer Aniston, and I almost forgot about this. Yesterday I was on like People magazine online, which I'm not usually, but there was a video of Jennifer Aniston showing up to an Ulta, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Like a place? Because she has some product line now.
Yeah.
And she's going to sneak in. Mm-hmm. So she's going undercover.
Yeah.
So she puts on the most Jennifer Aniston clothes you could ever imagine.
Is it all gray cashmere?
Did you see it?
No, I'm just guessing.
It's a gray, like, car coat sweater.
Yeah.
That, you know, like a cardigan that goes, like, below your, like a very thick one of those. Okay, then Jennifer Aniston sunglasses, like just huge, and then a floppy fucking hat. Like you couldn't put on a baseball hat.
Yeah.
She puts on this crazy felt floppy
hat.
No
one's going to look at you.
Right. I mean, and then she goes into the store, and then I see that the hat is like chewed off. Like part of it's like ripped or chewed off. So I was like, okay, maybe she's, I don't know, maybe she got stoned and tried to eat her hat. I don't know. But this is just what I imagine Jennifer Aniston's life is like. So anyway, so then she gets the thing and she's like, this is so exciting. And she buys her product and she gets back in the car and she shows it. She's like, oh my God, I'm so excited. I'm like, why are you doing this? Like, you're a comedian. I mean, I know she hates being called a comedic actress for whatever reason, but like, you're so talented. Why are you fucking, you don't need to do this. You have more money than God. Like, this is so dumb. I don't know. I just think it's, does the world really need another? Sorry, that's my alarm telling me to get my groceries from the refrigerator. do we need another line of beauty products?
Okay, I think the magnificent thing that we have to take away from the Gwyneth Paltrow trial is that we are no longer demanding relatability from Gwyneth Paltrow. For 20 years, we hated her because she wasn't relatable.
Right.
And then she turned 50 and we're like, she's a fun witch.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And
she's a fun witch.
But like,
I still dislike her. I'm just,
We've already talked about it on the show. We
But like it makes me so sad. Okay, first of all, I believe that the greatest story our culture has ever produced is the 20 years of magazines about how Jennifer Aniston will never be happy.
Yes.
I love it. Yes. Nothing makes me happier.
Because you don't want her to be happy, or because it's such a roller coaster of a story?
It's a roller coaster of a story.
And it's just so made up.
You're manufacturing this thing about this person who truly just like...
fine not having kids. Fine.
She loves weed and her dog and fucking. And it's all taken care of.
And car coats.
Yes. Yeah.
She's fine.
She loves gray cashmere. She's doing fine.
Yeah.
But also it is... so sad that we take these people. Well, I have several times during college, I worked in a movie theater and I was so good at upselling concessions that I have frequently been like, maybe that is the thing that I was born for. And that we live in an economy that demands that people, for the sake of respectability, not do the thing that they are best at and love.
Yeah.
And there are so many celebrities who have tried, who have like killed the golden goose to try to be something else. And it's like, that woman, she's so fucking good at light comedy. Like,
People
around my age were supposed to look down on Friends when it was coming out.
Yeah.
And then I worked on a multicam with guys who talked about it with reverence. And I went back and watched it.
Mm.
And the show is so xenophobic. It is so homophobic. It is so terrible in so many ways. God damn, it's good.
It really holds up. In terms of comedy and characters and writing.
It's all character comedy.
It's all character comedy, yes.
No pop culture jokes. It's all character comedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so good. And she's best
master.
Thing on it.
I know.
She's like really, really, really good on it.
But you guys, she's got a beauty line. And this is so exciting. I'm going to go in. They don't know it's me. Everyone fucking knows it's you. You're Jennifer Aniston. Like, you're blonde.
That was a solid impression.
Thanks. I just did it for the first time, I think. I'm going to work on it. But, like, your beautiful mane is, you know, like... hanging out of your floppy hat. You gotta go watch. Just tell me what's going on with the hat. Why does she have a hat that
I'm
is half
definitely gonna
away?
Watch it.
I mean,
it's really weird.
I have to assume it's one of the dogs.
Does she have a lot of dogs? Is that part of her?
I only know because when I stopped getting magazines, I stopped being told the story. But her dead dog Norman meant a lot to her, and so I'm assuming
they're her kids.
That she has dogs now. Yes.
She's a dog mom.
They're fur babies. Yeah,
she's a dog mom. You guys.
Did you have something else to say?
No. That was it.
Guy, this has been so great.
This
I'm
is very
so
fun.
Glad we finally got you on now that I know you're an Angelino once and for all.
And it sounds like he has a lot more stories.
Yes,
so
I think we're going
to
have you back.
Multi-episode guest.
Do you
here.
Drink?
Oh, yes.
Okay, because we have bonus episodes sometimes where we invite someone on. We have
How to Survive After Dark.
We have a little drinky poo.
That would be lovely. So,
we have nighttime parties.
Yeah. We start at 6:30. We're really crazy.
When we say nighttime, we mean 6:30. Yes.
We're both moms and we drink.
I'm in the Valley.
You live in the Valley?
No. I'm saying I'm currently in the Valley. I respect your culture and your ways.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
Got
you
it,
know
got
I
it.
Am a Valley girl. You can take the girl out of the Valley, but you can't take the Valley out of the girl.
You taught me what Lancashire was.
I did?
Yes. You were telling a joke about how people had assumed fanciness because of your dad.
Uh-huh.
And you were just like, we lived off Lancashire. And
that's true. My dad still lives there. I'm not gonna say where. I was about to skip the cross streets like a fucking genius. Anyway, thank you so much.
This was great.
Thank
this
you so much
wonderful.
For having me.
So
this
funny.
Really fun.
And we will be right back with what did we learn today? Chris,
Danielle,
are you ready to learn what we learned today?
Get to it.
Taskmaster Juniors is hosted by former Taskmaster contestants Rose Matafeo and Mike Wozniak. They're very funny. I'm very excited about it. I was wrong. Taciturn is defined as reserved or uncommunicative in speech, saying little.
Which is not what those waves were doing.
No, they were saying a lot.
Mm-hmm. They were yelling.
10 Feet Tall and Bulletproof is a song by former Bud Light drinker and extremely masculine dresser Travis Tritt. Wait, is that true? Is that a real song?
Yes.
Whoa. He's also a far right nut job, I believe.
Yeah
that's
Isn't
why
he?
That's why he just said,
oh my God.
Former Bud Light drinker. That's insane. So that's an expression. Okay. Well, we said it would make a good country song, and I guess it did. The perfect recipe for an intoxicated drowning is a white person near any body of water.
Nice, Karen.
Floaties will keep your child's arm safe, but not their head.
Mm-mm.
Your kids can still drown in them. Virginia is a magical land of hillbillies and unicorns. That's what their bumper
That should be on
says.
Their state license plate.
Exactly. Yes.
When it comes to water, remember the wise words of Tupac Shakur. Keep your head up. That sounds good.
That's what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
For a life jacket to flip a person over, more buoyant material is positioned near the front of the life jacket so that the jacket rolls users over onto their backs. Okay. Yeah, that probably makes more sense than how do they know which is your front side? Idiot. Okay. Don't do stupid shit when you're near the water. Swift water can kill you no matter what kind of safety gear you have.
Yeah, dummy.
Yeah. Caught in fast water, go vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Reach or throw, don't go. Don't get in the water to save someone. Breaking news in Yuba County stars Allison Janney, Wanda Sykes, Regina Hall, and Awkwafina. All good people.
Yeah.
It's about a woman who takes advantage of her growing celebrity status when the police and the public think her dead husband is just missing. Okay. Yeah. This goes to my rule, mm-hmm. which is if it stars well-known people and you've never heard of it, it's terrible.
Yeah.
That rule applies 100% of the time.
And if it's a big cat, like a really big cast.
Yeah. Oh, big cast is also.
Red flag. Red flag.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Do you remember that movie with Neve Campbell and Bette Midler?
No.
And Danny DeVito, I think. No. Was
yes.
Years
we
ago?
Saw it. We watched it. It was terrible.
That movie gives me
yep.
the same kind of vibes.
Yes. Okay. So let me explain that is, I said my little speech about that very movie to Oliver and Jimmy because I said, this is a movie with very famous people and we've never heard of it. It's going to be terrible. I think Jimmy has rewritten that it actually wasn't terrible, but it was terrible.
But he might have liked it. He might have different.
No, but he also does this thing where he remembers wrong, even his own opinions. Right, Garen? Sometimes. So he'll be like, he'll say, have some opinion about a movie and then say, I'm not even sure I saw it. So I don't know. But I don't know what that movie is, but that was one of the examples.
Was it called?
I don't know. It was terrible.
I'm trying to find it.
Everybody, check out our episode on Patreon.
Yes.
I think it's up now because this is later in the future. So when this comes out.
Oh, you're saying our bonus episode.
Our bonus episode is
okay.
All,
I thought
already,
you meant this episode. And I was like, well,
this is a weird, we're in a weird time continuum because by the time you hear these words, listener, our bonus episode is probably out.
Yes, but maybe the next bonus episode is coming.
And I think I gave some stuff away.
Oh, right.
On
so
it.
So congratulations, people.
Yeah. Congratulations, winners, that I announced on that Patreon episode. And you got a thing. And
isn't it great? Don't you love it?
Do you have it yet? Did I send it in the mail? Because I'm the one probably addressing those envelopes.
Did she leave for Europe before sending it?
I hope I remember to send it before I left for my trip. And I hope you like it. And everybody, check out our Patreon, sign up for our newsletter, email us. You guys know all of this and where to find it by now. We've said it so many times, but if you forgot, Pod How to Survive is our website. Go to our Instagram, go to our Twitter, Pod How to Survive. So easy to find us. We still love reviews, and we still love your letters. So, guys,
send it.
Do us a solid. It doesn't cost any money to leave us a review either or to get our newsletter where we give you fun facts most weeks when I have time to do it.
Yeah. Garen, did you find out the name of the movie?
Drowning Mona.
Yeah, that's it. You mean Drowning Mona.
That's yes. Guys, earlier I said drowning because I'm a Midwest hillbilly. And then we had to re-record the intro.
So sorry, I just outed you.
So I'm sorry. And next time I will say washcloth.
Oh.
And sometimes I say things. What's another
that
word?
That one kills me.
Water. Oh, guess what I do sometimes that Sven catches me saying?
What?
Acrossed.
Oh.
Across the street.
See, acrossed I find charming. Washcloth, I want to punch you in the face.
Well, I don't usually do it anymore, no. So. I love you guys.
Yeah.
Until next time.
What? I guess I was going to say until next time.
Remain calm.